Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today, we're going to respond to your questions. Thank you for sending them in. And reminder to everybody, we're doing this new thing, which many have done, but I just think it's a fun way to interact. So many of you sending questions in written form, and that's great. But we are also wanting to say we're opening the world to voice memos. So here's what you do. You simply just take your phone, record a 1-minute voice memo with your name, where you're from. Those two things are important. And then a 1 minute, because longer than that's hard to listen to or hard to, you know, helps us all be concise, a 1 minute voice memo of your question. It can be shorter, obviously, but try to make it a minute. But we'd love to interact with you in this way. And what's fun is we've gotten some questions recently in that format. And so here's what you're going to hear. In a couple minutes, we're going to respond to some questions, but you're going to hear the question come on live, and then we're going to respond to it in real time. And it's kind of like you're even here in the room, which is exciting. Elizabeth.
Can I ask a question? I raised my hand.
Yeah, you just raised your hand. I was like, well, you're an adult.
What if somebody wants to send in a voice memo question, but they don't want to say their name or where they live? Because some people want to keep their questions a little more anonymous because other people
might listen. That's a great
point. They can just say their first name.
Can they do that?
Oh, sure.
Can they still send a voice memo if they don't want to say their name and location?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a sensitive topic, sure. Yeah, I think use discernment. There's no rules around this. All right.
Okay.
Good point.
Okay. I'm just thinking that will deter some people. Love,
rules are so important to you. Like, okay, we have to, these categories. That's okay. I would just say, if you'd like to send a voice memo in, go ahead. And if you would like to write one, that's fine too. But this is a fun way to interact. So I want to say that. Thank you to everyone who is taking a minute to rate and subscribe the podcast. Spotify is booming. Our Spotify growth has been insane. And a lot of people have been listening through Spotify. And then also Apple Podcast. And wherever you listen, would you just rate the podcast, subscribe, and even leave a comment? Those three things really help get the word out. They help this ministry grow, give people information that this is a thing. So thank you. And then to our YouTube audience, you can go and subscribe over there. Hit the little bell button so that when you actually hear, not hear, but when we release stuff, you'll get a little bell notification that we've done new stuff. So check that out. And then we just also want to let everyone know we are almost, we are really close to the Motherhood Retreat 2025. Get your tickets. They are going fast. Please go get them. Can't wait to see so many hundreds of you ladies in Portland, October 23rd. That's going to be a blast. Mm-hmm. And let's respond to some questions. So our first question is from Mac. You guys ready? Mm-hmm. We're gonna listen to this question in real time together, and we are going to respond.
Hi, my name is Mac, and I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah.
I'm
a parent of a one-year-old boy, and I'm also a middle school math teacher. So listening to Intentional Parenting has helped me in both my career and my parenting adventure. My question is, when considering our past family story and coming from a family where there may have been patterns that you truly do not want to replicate, how do you deal with the fear of not wanting to be like your parents? And when you do see yourself replicating patterns that hurt you when you were young towards your own children, how do you navigate that obstacle and move forward? Thanks for all you guys do. Have a good one.
Well, Mac, well spoken. Whoa.
Really well.
Man, I think you should be a professional communicator. Wow. Like, thank you for your question. And what a good question.
And thank you for being a middle school math teacher. That's a very important job.
Yes.
That's high praise to say that this would help you with your career. And thank you for sending in that question. I mean, I would love to hear thoughts. I have some that are stirring, but I would love to hear from the team. What are some things that come to mind?
Well, the first thing that stood out to me was she mentioned, how do you navigate the fear?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so important. I've been thinking about this a lot lately of just how subtle fear can be and how intense of a driver it can be, especially in the realm of our parenting. Fear of all the things that we're afraid we're not going to be able to do or give our kids, fear of the things we are going to do, fear of past family patterns being passed down. And I just feel like it's such an important thing that we need to be able to name those fears, to be able to say out loud, like it sounds like you're doing, Mac, I am so afraid that I'm going to pass down these same things that were handed to me. I see them in myself. And to let that fear drive us to God, who his love casts out all fear. And he is the one who can miraculously stop generational things. He uses us to do it and usually will guide us in a, here are the steps you need to take to break those patterns like we talked about in that past episode. But we can get so trapped and so stuck in fear, and what our kids end up experiencing from us is all of our fear, none of our actual presence. And they're not able to distinguish between an understanding, okay, I understand where this fear comes from my mom. I understand what's driving, how she's handling, why she's overreacting. Like they can't make all those distinctions. But when we can name with God and with others, and then eventually as our kids get older, name those fears like, hey, I'm really afraid I'm going to mess up in this area with you. I just want you to know that I see it. You know, that's so powerful with our kids. But that was what stuck out to me is like really facing that, like looking straight at that fear.
Yeah. And I'd love to piggyback on that because I did say that to myself many times. But two aspects of it. When you do see yourself going, falling into that pattern, it's almost like, you know, in the roads, the freeways in Portland, Oregon, where it rains so much, get kind of ruts where the tires go. And, you know, when it's really wet and rainy, you kind of want to stay out of those because you lose a little bit of control of your car. It is a natural thing that we're going to go back into those ruts. Those are the ones that our parents forged for us, the natural reaction to certain circumstances. I would say, first of all, be gentle with yourself when that happens. Even the fact that you are recognizing that there's a thing that you don't want to pass down. Right there, you're halfway there, right there, easily halfway there, maybe more. And by seeing this is, it's going to come up. You are going to fall into those ruts. And then as soon as it happens, just between you and God, repent. Just, this is not, I know this is not the way of the kingdom. This is the way of hurt. I'm sorry, Lord, restore me back to who you're making me to be. Right there, you are, that's an invitation to God to change you and to change the patterns that you've been really indoctrinated, for a different metaphor, as justifiable responses in the moment. And if you do that enough times, hundreds of times, you do begin to see yourself changing. I'm not the same person I was when I was a young mom encountering some of those same things. My responses have, those overreactions have dulled magnificently over years and years of making mistakes, accepting the forgiveness of God, repenting, then accepting the forgiveness of God. And then the fact that you are aware of it and you're calling it out to your kids, I just responded in a way that was unhealthy and wrong. It is not your fault. This is on me. Please forgive me. You're living out the gospel. We talk about it all the time, right there. And I don't think your kids ever get tired. I don't think it's possible for them to get tired of hearing you initiate an apology. Not waiting for them to point out to you, but initiating.
So I
would say just the fact you're not ignoring it is an absolute, shows you right there that you are being filled with the Spirit of God. And most likely your parents ignored it or bypassed it or justified it. You're not doing that.
Mac, the thing that comes to my mind, I couldn't relate more, you know, I relate with you so much. I could not even, you know, as you're saying that, I'm like, wow, yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. When you have patterns that you see in yourself, that was the pattern that you received and you don't want it. And, but it's still, it's almost like, it's happening in real time. And you're almost like, no, I don't, that's not what I want to do. And that's not who I want to be. Mm-hmm. And that there's a lot of, you know, biblical realities to that. Like who we want to be and who we actually are can sometimes be, there can be a big gap. So I think the first thing is that you have a vision for who you want to be. Mm-hmm. I think that's huge. Yeah. Like having a vision of the kind of mom that you want to be. And that's a beautiful thing. But what can happen is sometimes we can hold our real selves against the vision of who we want to be. And in that chasm is a lot of shame. And I think that on the road to who you see yourself to be and who God really wants you to be and who you actually are, it's like a really bumpy situation to get there. And so to be gracious with yourself, like mm-hmm. I think repair is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. Is if you can repair along the way and notice who you notice who you don't want to be. Negative development is one of the most powerful mm-hmm. forms of development. Like, mm-hmm. you know, learning the positive thing to do is good, but you learn equally as much, if not more, of what to do by learning what not to do. And so mm-hmm. you have a clear picture of what you don't want and what you shouldn't, you know, what you don't want to pass on and what you shouldn't do. Let that be your guide to asking Jesus, who is it you want me to be? And then mm-hmm. I do think that being careful of shame, like you're going to have moments that are patterned in you from your parents, and that's okay. Some of them are really good, but the ones that are really bad, I think naming them and saying, and even if there's a spouse involved, friend group, community, like I don't want to be this type of person. And even saying that also mm-hmm. gives like a certain level of accountability and responsibility to you mm-hmm. to say like, hey, I've declared I don't want to be this type of person or this type of mom. Will you help me? Mm-hmm. Elizabeth and I have that, right? She knows the kind of dad I want to be. And she also gets to see really clearly the dad I'm not. And so she helps me see who I've already declared I want to be. And so just practically on a very practical level, I would say, have a clear vision, beware of shame, and be very honest with where you're at. And each day, as you make repairs and step into it, I think Jesus gives you grace to mm-hmm. fully live into it.
I have one more thing to add.
Please.
You know, I've grappled with Ephesians 6, where we are, where it's quoted in the Old Testament in verse 2 and 3, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, and then he quotes the promise. This is Paul quoting Genesis, Exodus. No?
Yeah.
Right?
Quoting yes. the Ten Commandments, yeah.
Yes. Quoting the Ten Commandments, which are not in Genesis. Yeah, they're in Exodus. Okay, thank you.
Well, they're repeated again too, but yeah. Exodus.
So that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. I think one way of seeing that verse, what has made sense to me, is your parents made mistakes, but they also did some good. Mm-hmm. And so honoring the good that they did, it's so easy to just want to just cancel somebody or just sum them up as a failure because they did blank. Mm-hmm. And I think if we want that promise that we're going to live long in the earth, which I think is relating to the generational promise of generation after generation mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. of following Jesus and being blessed by him, that may be well with you. In other words, this mm-hmm. woman wants to do well. But I think part of that begins with honoring the few things, if you can find the things your parents did right, instead of just focusing on what they did wrong. And all of us get that unbalanced at times. That's normal and natural, partly because we're just being called to deal with this thing. Mm-hmm. God is calling us as, okay, in your generation, this thing that's been going on for the last 4 or 5 generations needs to stop. Mm-hmm. And so then we focus on it, we get help for it. But then there comes a time where we need to just rest with it too and say, you know, my parents did this. My dad got up and went to work every day. I was never hungry. I had decent clothes. Mm. Just being able to grab what you can, I think that gives you a more integrated picture of life as it really was, mm-hmm. which enables you then to be able to do what Brooke and Elizabeth, you were talking about.
Mm. Yeah. Hit us, Phil.
All I would add is, I think I love everything that you're saying. And I think you're both you and Brooke said, don't be too hard on yourself. Yeah. You know, don't shame yourself. You know, she sees uh-huh. these things in her life that she doesn't uh-huh. want to remain there. Yeah. I just a reminder to me that we're all in process, that mm-hmm. God is working and, you know, we're going to, when you and I teach together this coming week, we'll be talking about how God works in us. Yes. You know, God wants you to, he wants you to be one who does the work, right?
Yes, sir.
So yeah. she's doing the work. And I just think we all need to remember that, yes, you know, I have a long ways to go in my discipleship to Jesus, but I'm not who I once was, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's that old saying, I'm not what I used to be. I'm not what I hope to be, but I thank God he's changing me. Mm-hmm. So I think, but she wants him to change her. And yes. So I think that's you beautiful. Said to pray. He said, you guys pray about these things. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want this out of my life. I mean, we come to Jesus by faith and we want something out of our life. If it's anger or whatever, we come by faith and say, I need help. Mm-hmm. And I just love that she's doing that. Yeah. And I think the Lord is excited about it. And then we can break some of these things. And so our kids won't have to suffer from some of the same things that we did.
That's
the beauty of the gospel. We can give our kids something we didn't get ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's the next question, Elizabeth? You get to do this one.
Okay. I'm going to try to summarize an email in the form of a question, which she put a little summary at the top, but then I'm going to give a little context. So the question is, are there things in our life, good things, that we need to stop doing in order to help us live more spirit-filled lives? And then she goes on to explain that she has 4 kids, 8, 5, 3, and 3 months, and she's homeschooling. Her husband feels really convicted about it and passionate about it. Sounds like she does too. But it's really, really hard. And she said she's over and over again having to repair with her kids. Mm-hmm. And she's asking herself the deeper question. Basically, what I'm hearing from her question is, at what point is it not actually benefiting my family to be doing this because it's bringing out all this stuff in me? And then she mentions in there, I really want to show my kids the gospel by the way I'm loving them and living with them. And am I damaging that by having to repair all the time because I keep blowing it? And I'm deeply summarizing her email. And she's just wrestling with what's the right decision for her kids with school. And I think this is a really important question. And it's one I've had to deeply wrestle with in the context of homeschooling. Like, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? Because it really is so hard and it really does bring out the worst in me more days than it doesn't in so many ways. And I think it's these types of questions, saying no to something good, that are really hard to make decisions around because they're not black and white. They're not even always moral. Now, in some cases, if any of your options for your kids' school, for example, you know, are just horrible options, or you genuinely can't afford, or, you know, then maybe there is some morality that comes into play of like, it is your responsibility to do this. But more often than not, it's not really a moral decision. Mm-hmm. It's a discernment decision. And so on one hand, I feel like there's a part of me that's like, yeah, if it's bringing out the worst in you over and over and over again, maybe you do need to consider other options. And then there's also this other part of me, and this is my own lived experience, where God sometimes he oftentimes uses our kids, but different situations with our kids to unearth in us the very things that actually really need to be unearthed. Because it forces us to actually face them and not put Band-Aids on them. And so I see both beautiful opportunity in a question like this of maybe God does want to do something really beautiful through all of the hard. But I also understand her wrestle of like, but is it is it the right heart? Is it a good heart? Is it? Yeah. And so I think the word that's coming to mind is discernment. Like the prayer needs to move to deep prayers for discernment, you know?
And understanding, think of her. She has a 3-month-old baby. Yes. I mean, right at 3 months, to me, it always seemed like, oh my gosh, I cannot do this. My body is caving in on me, my not sleeping, all the things. And then she has a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Right when they're beginning to defy you and
I know.
Have temper tantrums and just get bored easily, not entertain themselves. I mean,
and
3 years from now, this is going to be a completely different situation.
And an 8-year-old and 5-year-old, the requirements for homeschooling and having to sit down one-on-one are high at those ages.
Oh, yes.
I think that's the hardest combination. That's where we were at when we started, although Sloan was 8 months, she was a little older, but she was a toddler. So I had 2 toddlers. So yeah, right in the thick of
this is
like, it's as hard as it feels.
Yeah,
so, yeah, that detail.
And in that way, and I love the way you use the word capacity, because this question is not just about homeschool. It's about you're going to be asking this question your whole life long.
Yeah.
You may end up with a job some point that is stretching you unbelievably, and you come home and, you know, I have a friend who is a counselor, and she says she comes home and she just comatose.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have a 3-month-old and 3-year-old and she has no one at home, and they've accommodated it because this is her calling and this is her gifting, and financially, you know, it's setting them up for the future.
Yeah.
So this is going to happen. When people ask me sometimes, should I have more kids? The only thing I can really offer is capacity. Yeah. Really, do you have the capacity? Do you think you have the capacity in your circumstances? So,
but that's a tricky one too, because when I think of how much my capacity has grown
because of
all the things that have pushed it to the limit, have felt way beyond my capacity.
Yes.
It's the things that have stretched me way beyond what I actually have capacity for that have grown my capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But what I want to address in this person's question specifically, and I think this is universal to a lot of us moms, is deeply embedded here is fear that she is ruining her kids' experience with God because she's not being a good enough example.
Yeah.
And I think that can be so sneaky and so subtle, whether it's homeschool or if you choose to work or not work, or if you choose to hire help outside the home, if you choose to have your kids in sports or not, like it can undergird so much for, and I think it's more of a mom thing than a dad thing, but I mean,
it's hard to say because everyone's so different. Just to add, in addition to what you're saying, I think when our kids see us struggle with our own situation and formation in Jesus, it's one of the best things for them.
Yeah,
I do too.
And I think what you're having to remember, what we all have to remember, is this idea that our kids need to see us completely regulated, calm, perfect, and great is actually not helpful for their development. If we give them a picture of reality that is never messing up, never dealing with our own stuff, never actually working through it, having just the real grit and grind of having to work through pain of life, they're going to get to adulthood, and maybe this is your experience, person sending the question, where you're honestly confused and like, oh my gosh, well, my mom never had this.
And
my parents never had this. And why is it like, am I ruining and damaging my kids? And I would just say the opposite is so important, that you actually need to struggle in front of your kids. Now, there's certain amounts that are appropriate and I would say not appropriate, but given the question, I don't think you're in the inappropriate range as much as you are in the uncomfortable range, which is where you need to be for formation. And so I mean, I look at this and I'm like, girl, you are exactly where you need to be. Like, I think it's uncomfortable, it's embarrassing, it's hard, it's challenging. And that's the perfect recipe for you to really take serious what invitation Jesus is leading you into. And so I think in many ways, like as I hear this and I read this story and this question, I am like, oh yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm constantly feeling like I'm screwing up my kids. I constantly feel like I have to repair. And the more and more therapists and psychologists we talk to, they say this constantly and over, the power is in the repair. And I've said this in multiple spaces, so I can't remember if I've said it here, but I do, the phrase that is always still so comforting to me was a therapist said to me, and I think I was on his podcast, and he said, yeah, I've never sit down with an adult man or an adult woman, and they say, my parents messed up a lot, but yet they apologized over and over and over again. I really got to work through that. Like they're never like, that's not the person.
Not
that
what's
he
getting
sees.
Him in the office.
Yeah.
The repair is over and exponentially powerful. And if I could just give 1 second of hope, the other night I was talking to my son, who is basically an adult in many ways. He's 16, but we're having very adult conversations. Mm-hmm. And there's many times as a dad, I feel like, gosh, especially with the firstborn, he sees a lot of the parts of me that have had to grow, where maybe the girls might not see as much. Hopefully as they get older, I'm hopefully getting better. But he's got a lot of the raw versions of it. And I'm thinking about, like, there's often times I think, man, he's probably going to have a lot of therapy he has to do just around me. And well, my dad was this, but he was also this. And you know, these are the insecurities I'm just sharing in a very private space right now. And, and we're talking about a current, like a situation he was in, and he was explaining a situation and explaining basically a family dynamic of someone, like a friend he knew, and explaining their family dynamic and just kind of saying how the dad particularly was like a very hard person. And as he was describing the dad, I was like, literally, if I could be completely honest with you, I was like, I do that. And that's me. And oh no. And so I was literally waiting as I'm talking to my son for him to say, you know, kind of like you, dad. And I was just, I was waiting for that because I was like, he's explaining parts like my shadow side, the parts of me that are really weak. And then just in one amazingly healing phrase, he goes, he's the completely opposite of you, dad. And I was like, oh, what?
Wow.
You know, and wow. I'm highlighting this story to think, to say that I think Jesus is so interested in covering our biggest blunders and helping our kids see the good in it. And I think what grace looks like sometimes is God not even helping our, letting our kids remember the full weight of our blunders and the full weight of our mistakes. Now there's, that's not true in every case, but I would say in this one, I was like made aware how you see me and how I see myself. I know all the rawness of this, but you almost by God's grace haven't experienced it like that. And you experience stability and you experience consistency and you can experience safety. These are words he used. And, and I was like, I could tell you so many stories where I wasn't any of those things to you. And so to the lady, to the spouse, to the wife listening, can I just encourage you? God is so interested in covering up your deepest weaknesses and putting grace around them. And I think there's a lot of beauty. Struggle in front of your kids because they need to know how to do it. So teach them. We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
I think that reminds me of something Phil encouraged me with once when I realized that I had, in especially in John Mark's teenage years, used shame-based discipline or punishment when he was a teenager, not knowing what else to do. Like, what do you do with this teenager? And what is it you said to me, Phil, about, remember, you know, when I was having him on his hands and knees mopping the floor, and you said to me something along the lines, that's not what he remembers.
Oh, well, he literally told you he doesn't remember that at all.
No.
It's been wiped from his memory. Well, my thing is, he thought you were making it up. You thought it was your biggest fail, and he does not remember it. That's because it's laid against thousands of home-cooked meals and loving times and all the good memories. And here's, you know, your son, Brooke, saying, you know your failures, and he knows some of your failures, but he also is being far outweighed by what a good father you are to him. And so he's viewing you with a lot of grace. And I think that that's what you're saying to this mom. Don't be so hard on yourself. My only answer to this is you start off by saying this is a discernment issue. Then you said you need to see what invitation Jesus is inviting you into. There's no right answer to this. We all go through things where we have to decide, is God trying to stretch me and say, I need to put my roots deeper down in him because I can't do this in my own strength. In which case you cry out to God for help, which one of the things I used to pray all the time when I was dealing with fear, Psalm 138:3, on the day I called, you answered me, you made me bold with strength in my soul. Does she need more strength in her soul? But, you know, you read the whole email to us earlier and she was also worried about her gospel witness. Or is this too much for her, the way she's wired? Because we're all wired different. We all have different capacity. In which case, Psalm 131, where David is saying, I don't involve myself in things too difficult for me. I'm like a weaned child on my mother's breast. So I think sometimes we could say, you know what? This is too much for me. Another mom can do it. And that's a danger too. Well, why she's doing it, why can't I do it? So I think it's a discernment issue. And we all have these situations and we need to listen. And first one that'll tell me is Diane. Like, you're not doing well in this situation. But I have to say, well, is that because I'm trying to do it in my own strength and I need to go deeper into God and say, without you, I can't. But you want to help me and stretch me into this because I know this is the invitation you're inviting me into, to go deeper and to do this for my kids. Or is God saying, no, I'm actually freeing you up from that. I'm not calling you to do that. There's another way. And if you come to me, I'll show you the other way. Yeah. That's a better way for you, the way I've wired you. So I think that's where counsel comes in, especially husband and wife praying together and all. Those are my thoughts. Mm-hmm. It could go either way.
Yeah.
But she needs to discern for her what God is saying.
Yeah. Very wise.
Two more thoughts and then we can move on to the next question. But I also think in situations like this, you have to get really creative. And so, especially with homeschooling, like you cannot even hardly look at another homeschool family and how they do it because your family is going to be really different. Mm-hmm. And so if you need to hire help, if you need to hire a tutor, if you need, I mean, like getting creative with what are there any, asking the question, are there any things anything you could do? Is there anything you could do that would actually help you be able to try doing it and be able to show up a little bit different to it? Yeah. And that's not failure. That's not you not being able to do enough or having enough capacity. So I think sometimes we just have to get really creative with how we do what God's asking us to do, if he truly is. And then a scripture that comes to mind is one I've been just sitting with a lot is Hebrews 12. When it says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And the things that stand out are, what are the things that hinder? And sometimes that's really practical things, how we're spending our time on our phone too much, whatever. Sometimes it's really practical. Sometimes it's like lies we're believing, fear that I'm not going to example the gospel enough to my kids. Maybe that's a weight that is hindering what God actually has asked you to do. And you're going to feel so much lighter if with the power of the Holy Spirit, you can shed that weight. And then obviously the sin that we get wrapped up in, that could be fear, that could be anger, whatever it is, to run the race that's marked out for us, which again, back to discernment, you need the Spirit to reveal to you. And it's probably going to be 1 year at a time with schooling decisions of like, what is the race marked out for me and for our family? And then it's fixing our eyes on Jesus. And it's that beautiful line, so that we will not grow weary or lose heart. But then the passage goes on to talk more about like suffering and hardship, but equating it to discipline, because in biblical language, discipline is just training. It's equipping us. So then verse 7, it says, endure hardship as discipline. Then it goes on this beautiful, explains that how God is like how a parent disciplines and trains their children. And then it says, no discipline, so think of training, what hard things produce in you, seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. And so no matter what it is that you're doing right now, that is whatever you discern the Spirit's leading in the future of how you're supposed to school your kids, for example, or you fill in the blank of whoever's listening, whatever your hard thing is that you're like, am I should be doing this or not? Even as you're waiting on the Lord to show you what is right for your family, what is right for your life, recognizing that that's what God can do through the hardship, through the discipline that is training you. It, over time, it does produce a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. And that's where the agency we have comes in, is like, am I going to let this just build up my fear, my resentment for my kids, my frustration that my husband wants us to homeschool or whatever it might be? Or am I going to let this actually root some stuff out of me that really does need to be rooted out?
Right? But, I have to say something. You just said something like, if my husband really wants us to homeschool, I got to say something.
Ours is maybe the opposite.
No, it's not that. Hey, listen, we have our issues and we talk about them here. We don't have to talk about every single one.
It's true.
No, I would just say, if husband, that is your strong conviction and your wife is saying, I don't know if I can do it, but you're like, well, I really want this. I'm holding this ideal. Now I'm assuming a lot with this, but if is that is your dynamic, you can't play if you don't have skin in the game. So if you want your wife to do that and she's struggling under that burden, but you're like, I'm going to work and you kind of just got to do this because this is what I'm hoping for. That is not kind and that is not loving and that's not helpful. You have got to figure out how this works for her to not drown.
Yeah.
And you can't expect her to hold that if you're unwilling. Now, I'm making assumptions here. So if that's the case.
She said he's actually quite willing to make it, do whatever.
So that's maybe for someone else. That was prophetic for some other family.
But that is really important. We actually just had a conversation about this, about homeschool specifically. And we've had to learn to work together as a team because I recognize how our dynamic is not going to be the dynamic that like we're both teaching them, both sitting down and doing the teaching. Yeah. I have Brooke's full support. But the actual teaching them, that's just not our dynamic. But we had to have a conversation and I had to say, I think I need you to be more, understand what's happening a little bit more so that I feel like we're a team.
Yeah.
And this is not me saying, I would like you to take science and history and do it exactly how I would like you to do it.
I'm stressed out even upon hearing that.
But I had to voice, like, I think in order to for me to feel like we're a team in this, I need us to talk about this more and I need you to have a basic understanding of what we do every day.
Yeah,
and you were great. You were super receptive about that.
I'm in. I'm just saying I don't always know how to be in. We need to move to the next question. But the last thing that she kind of highlighted and again, this is a different part of the question, but and you mentioned it for a minute, but are there good things that we need to stop doing in order to help live more spirit-filled lives? Yes, sometimes, of course. Yes. I mean, it just depends. I think there's certain things though that are really essential. So if the essential things are stuff that is school, work, family, like there's essential things we have to keep doing. I do think though, there are a lot of things that we do that we have not maybe put under that awareness of like, is this stopping me from being the kind of spirit-filled person I want to be? And I think going through just taking an audit of your own life of like what things waste my time, what things bring me life, what things bring me attention. Sometimes the things that bring you attention, you can't actually take off your list, maybe like the homeschool thing. And I think those are, again, invitations to the spirit-filled life. They are not counter to it.
And piggybacking on that, just when it comes down to the practical of actual homeschool, can you do a stripped down version of homeschool for the next couple of years? I'm going to teach these 8-year-old and the 5-year-old to be able to read.
Math and reading.
Do their math. But I'm not going to, classical conversations is beautiful curriculum, but it's a whole life.
Yeah.
You know.
Pretty intense.
And they may be something that she could pick up on later, or maybe there's a stripped down version of just that. Just, you know, there's always what I think Phil has taught me that I didn't come in naturally understanding is, can you think outside the box?
Yeah.
And instead of all or nothing, I go all for nothing. I have to do it and I have to get an A. You don't have to get an A with a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old pretty much. They're going to keep learning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love this. Phil, anything before we move on?
Nope.
Okay. We got one. No. We got one right here. Here is a fun one. So just recently we did an episode, on breaking generational patterns. And I think it's been a well-received episode, but you know, obviously we talked about how do we actually go listen to the episode, link in the show notes. You can listen there. I'm not going to do that right now. That's going to take a while. Yeah. So here's the question. If this is a foreign idea to your own parents, so if you are maybe in your 30s and this idea of breaking generational cycles or patterns is, foreign to your own parents, maybe in their 60s and 70s, this person says, this guy here, Derek, how do we start the conversation? And then he kind of says jokingly, especially if they're stubborn Scandinavians. So how do we start the conversation about breaking generational patterns and being aware of just the generational patterns that are living within your own family, but how they got there? How do we have that kind of conversation?
But then there was another important detail of there's a stepmom maybe who doesn't know Jesus.
I'm doing part one and two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I'm just trying to keep the, because we could go off on all this stuff, but how do we start that?
It's the second question.
Yeah, it's number two.
Okay.
So I think that is an important piece. As how do we actually start that conversation when maybe there's not a comfortability around it? I think a lot of question asking and curiosity is where you start. No one gets offended by questions. People love talking about themselves. Psychologically, I was teaching my son about this the other day. I was like, the Bible says he who wants friends must himself be friendly. It's like when you ask questions of other people, psychologically, they will like you more because people love talking about themselves. Mm-hmm. So what
friendly
ends up
questions.
Friendly questions or just questions in general, because practically when you get a person talking about themselves and then you leave that conversation with that person, they feel really good. Mm-hmm. And it's just that they remember liking you because you brought out parts mm-hmm. of themselves. And so I think with family members, asking curious questions, I'll just say this for me. I don't think my mom loves history. My dad really never talked about his family because there was so much hurt connected to it. But my mom has always loved history, like to the point that it's kind of concerning. My mom, if you're listening, I love you. But I'm concerned about your love of history sometimes. And just documentaries and books and like the cultures of the time. So I think she's been really curious in her own life of her own past and story. So I've been able to talk with her really easily about like, okay, so your grandfather was this, but what about your great-great or my great-great-grandfather and grandmother, mm-hmm. where were they from mm-hmm. and where was that about? And so taking that curiosity approach of just general information, mm-hmm. I think starts the conversation in a non-defensive way to then get to parts where it's like, oh, interesting. So you're saying grandpa was also, or great-great-grandpa was also an abusive alcoholic. Interesting. You know, like, mm-hmm. oh, and that played out in their marriage this way. Do you ever see any of that showing up in our family? Or have you mm-hmm. experienced that? You know, I think if you kind of take a route of curiosity, it just puts the fences down and it allows, I mean, to the point of the question, how you start mm-hmm. the conversation, I think that is one of the most helpful ways to start the conversation that doesn't immediately cause defensiveness. Because if we go in and be like, you guys are all really messed up Scandinavians, as he's saying, where do you think that came from? that's a different question altogether. So any other thought? That's how I would start it. But
well, I think to further that too was, with if it's like something specific that you're noticing you want to break in your own life, but you can draw the line of where it came through your family mm-hmm. line, but maybe that's not been an open conversation. I think also if you have the type of relationship or you have conversations that could sound something like, you know, I am really noticing that I am like drive myself really, really hard. I'm thinking of like mm-hmm. our family, like I think you even mentioned on the last episode, mm-hmm. hard work
yeah.
was like
yeah.
drilled into our family for generation mm-hmm. after generation, mm-hmm. which over time led to workaholism, mm-hmm. to finding your identity and your worth in what you do.
Tension in the home.
Yeah. So say yeah. you're the one who's the first one being like, I want to change that.
Yeah.
Being honest about where you're at in your journey without statements of blame. Like I'm recognizing I derive a lot of my worth from what I accomplish, what I do, mm-hmm. how good I am at my job. And I don't want my kids to carry that burden. Like mm-hmm. I'm realizing I'm waking up to it in myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking myself the question, where did that come from? And what's mm-hmm. driving that? And notice there's others in our family who I think maybe struggle with the same thing. And I'd love to be able to just talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's you yeah. kind of like peeking behind the curtain, just is this,
yeah.
could this be an open door of conversations? Right. Because really, if your parents are not initiating those conversations or cracking the door open at all or alluding mm-hmm. to that they see any of that in their own life, then you're switching roles. If you're trying to start the conversation, you're doing it almost more from a parental perspective. Mm-hmm. Think of like how a parent is trying to communicate something to a angsty teenager. Like mm-hmm. You have to have some masterful communication skills if mm-hmm. you want to get through in yes. a way to make them think it was their idea. Mm-hmm. yeah. And asking questions is where you start.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you're taking of like, I'm the curious parent here trying to get my kid to arrive at,
yeah.
to think for themselves, yeah. you know, I think is a little bit, that might sound totally manipulative. Well, that's not how I mean it.
It's not. The only other thing I would just say is that you have to realize that if you're talking to your adult parents, this was so helpful in my own recognition of my own story. If you're wanting to change a cultural or like a pattern within the family at large, and you're the child trying to convince your parents to do that, just as a great, great reminder, you can't do that alone. Your parents who have set that culture have to be the one to change it. And it's so important to realize that even though we want to change our parents and have these conversations, like, I'd love for our family dynamic to look like this, that might go far and they might go, okay, yeah, we can step into that. But they're the gatekeepers of that family culture and moment. And my therapist told me this a long time ago. He's like, I'm trying to have these conversations with my family and hopefully, you know, these things would change. And he's like, how's that going for you? I was like, it's terrible. It's blowing up in my face. No one wants to talk about it. No one wants to change. And he's like, that's because you can't, just because you can clearly articulate what you would hope for it to be. They have to almost in many ways give permission as the mm-hmm. mother and father of that family and that family culture. Mm-hmm. And so if it doesn't work in that family culture, I just want to highlight, it can work in yours. You can set the new standard. And it's a grieving process when it doesn't work in that one. Phil and Diane, any thoughts on that one?
No, just, you know, we've talked about this before. when it's a parent and you're commanded to honor them, you can still appeal to them. Yeah. And you were really appealing by bringing up, asking questions. And mm-hmm. that's actually showing respect. You know, when you ask your mom, tell me about your great-grandfather. You actually care.
I do.
You're interested in my story. So that's honoring them. And then I think that opens up their heart for you to maybe even make an appeal. Mm. Hey, mom, you know, I know this is how we were raised and Elizabeth and I are really trying to do this and we'd love your help in it. Mm. And mm-hmm. would you be willing to? So I think that's the only other thing I would add is when it should come from the parents. But if it's not, it's not hopeless. You can still try the power of appeal and prayer and do it prayerfully, and carefully.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have some thoughts on this too. Number one, you need to make your parent feel really safe because shame is going to be all over them. You know that the enemy is also going to be trying to shoot them with arrows of shame. Shame comes so very naturally. So if the more you can do, like what you're doing, Brooke, with your wonderful mom, is you're recognizing her love of history and you're seeing that as kind of a key into some of these conversations. I feel this in this area 100%. I'm never able to overcome my fear enough to talk to my mom about some of the patterns that had hurt me very deeply. But I think if I had it to do over again, I would try to be less of a peacekeeper and more of a peacemaker. And that's a term, again, Brooke, that you have taught me. As a peacekeeper, I always felt it was my job, and I was assigned that job by my dad to some degree. Don't upset your mom. Because there were triggers in her life that would just set off areas, obviously, of deep pain and deep shame that would set off major explosions. So I learned to keep the peace. But we didn't actually ever get to make peace over it, even before she passed away. We danced around it because I was afraid of triggering this response. Obviously, there was deep wounding and hurt in her life. And she was horrifically ashamed of that. But I wish that I'd been able to love her enough to say, Mom, I see this in you and it's pervasive and I feel it myself too. I would just love to hear about your experience more. Where did this start? Where did this come from? I think she would have actually felt loved by that. She might have reacted. But looking back, honestly, I wish I'd initiated. I wish I'd been willing to weather a bit of a storm or two in order to really actually clear the way for us to love each other with some freedom and with freedom and compassion. I mean, I tried to do that from the outside, but I never was willing to invade her space in that way. So sometimes maybe I would just say it takes courage. Be as kind as you can. If you want, what you want is peace in the end. But there's a difference between making peace so that you actually are actually to help heal your mom or your dad. And I think, Elizabeth, you did that with me. I mean, I think it was you more than anybody else who pointed out a generational pattern of a really messed up thinking over food and eating that my grandma was always on a diet. My mom was always on a diet. I was always on a diet. And when you were a little chubby little girl, I put you on a diet. And then you found a new and healthier way through counseling and that you decided to do this, approach this differently with your daughters. And you brought me on board. You very much, like even shushing me when I would say something about, you know, well, I'm not eating this now.
Shushing you with respect. It was a respectful shushing.
Because you knew I was on board. I want to break this. I don't want.
But that's the key. You were on board. Yeah. You opened the door for us to be able to talk like that.
Yeah.
I think it would be very different.
Very.
And there'd be a loneliness to it if I was clearly seeing, I want to break this and I'm going to do it differently. But if you were really defensive or like, well, I was doing the best I could. Why are you criticizing me? And so I think also there can be times when we, as the ones who want to make the generational changes in a family context where we might be the only ones, there is a loneliness to that that we actually have to embrace. And a grief process, not just a process of you grieve at one time, a continual grief of I want to be able to do this as a whole of a family, but right now I can't. And so I'm still going to do it. And I wish that I could bring my family along the journey with me, but I can't. And so I'm going to ask God for others who will be my family on the journey in it and not others that will just accidentally give you fuel against your family to disconnect yourself from your family more. You have to be careful who those others are. Mm-hmm. But people who can just stand in the gap and be in that loneliness with you, who've maybe experienced it, who can just encourage you, it's worth it. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Mm-hmm. So that you don't have to silently suffer through it. But you might not be able to be open with your family about it. And there's a grief attached to that.
For sure.
And perhaps you can be the generation that starts that openness.
Yes. So these are your questions. And thank you for letting us respond. If you have more, send a voice memo to hello@intentionalparents.org. 1 minute, your name, where you're from. And if, as you're taking Elizabeth's advice, maybe not your name and where you're from. If you're needed,
you can still send one if you don't want to share your name and your location.
But please do send those in. And thank you for staying to the end and listening to this. And we'd be honored to continue to respond to your questions.